Scott Serota, the President and CEO of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association, thank you for joining us on HealthOH.org.
It's my pleasure, Jackie.
If you go to the Blue Cross Blue Shield website, there is a lot of information about different issues related to the healthcare system. But what would you say Blue Cross Blue Shield views as the single most pressing issue facing the nation?
Jackie, if I had to put it in one word, I would say it's cost. The fact that healthcare costs today are out of control, essentially. They're rising at a rate which exceeds the growth of the general economy. So we have a situation where the economy is growing at a rate, healthcare costs growing faster than that rate, consuming more and more of our economic resources, to a point where it's more than $7,000 for every man, woman, and child in the United States, a $2.3 trillion problem, if you will. And we as a society have got to come to grips with the fact that the cost of delivering healthcare to Americans is just too much, and we have to figure out ways to get a better handle on healthcare costs and bring them more in control.
And before we get to some of the solutions that the association is proposing, let me first ask you, when you say that costs are out of control, and many people in the country certainly wouldn't disagree with that, how does that impact the Blues?
Well, sure. You know, we are, amongst other things, a financer of healthcare costs. We pool risk together and develop health insurance premiums for our members. Somewhere between 85 and 90% of the healthcare premium that we present to employers or individuals is based on the underlying cost of delivering care today. So as healthcare costs go up, healthcare premiums go up. As healthcare premiums go up, you know, we continue to face this pressure of more people becoming uninsured because the cost of insurance is unaffordable. As people become uninsured, they don't necessarily purchase health care in the most cost-efficient manner. They use the emergency rooms excessively, and they don't get the preventive care they need if they're uninsured. And as a result, it fuels that spiral. So, you know, it's kind of it's almost this self-fulfilling engine that is driving here. As costs go up, fewer people have coverage. As fewer people have coverage, they use the system inappropriately, so costs go up even faster. So we continue to run that cycle. We have to break that cycle. We have to get the actual cost of delivering medical care under control so that we can address the other issues that face us. But we have to get this issue of cost under control.
In January of this year, in 2008, the association issued a five-point plan called the Pathway to Covering America. Is that part of the answer to what you've been describing? And fill us in on what that five-point plan is.
Sure. The five-point plan does a couple things. First, it builds on the employer-based system that we have today to improve quality and value, because employers are very committed to ensuring that they have a healthy workforce, because not only does it impact their premiums, but it impacts productivity and a whole host of other things. So we believe that the link between employee benefits or healthcare benefits and the employer is important to maintain and to encourage. It's also built on a premise that is substantiated by research that as much as 30% of the care delivered today is ineffective, inappropriate, or redundant. So we can make a huge step toward making healthcare more affordable and therefore being able to extend coverage to more people by targeting that 30% and trying to get that 30% out of the system. So the five-point plan that we have developed focuses on quality and value, and then once we get that focus shifted in our delivery system, then we move to the next phase, which is to extend coverage to the uninsured. So, point one, focus on what works. We have been strong advocates of something we call comparative effectiveness. And this would be the creation of a public-private organization or institution that evaluates treatment protocols, comparing one to another, and develops a perspective on what really works in healthcare. And we get that information in the hands of providers, that in the hands of consumers, so they can do a better job of separating the hype from the reality of new medical treatments, pharmaceuticals, medical technologies, to really focus on what is really making a difference. We would envision this institution working with the various professional societies on the clinical side, developing protocols and procedures so that they could get the blessing of this Comparative Effectiveness Institute. And then we would envision that somehow we would build into law or regulation some kind of safe harbor with regard to medical malpractice professional liability for those clinicians who followed those protocols which were determined to be safe and efficacious for the treatments. So this is a public-private partnership, and we, the Blues, with our 100 million subscribers, are willing to fund our fair share, and we think the government and all payers should be a participant in creating and funding this institution, and we should get it up and going.
And in this plan, Mr. Sirota, where do you get to the idea that that the uninsured need to have access and coverage?
It's coming. It's coming.
Okay.
Just in a nutshell, Jackie, I think that to drive, we have to extend coverage to the 47 million people. And, you know, they're not all the same. Inside that 47 million people, you have about 20% of those folks, about 9 million people, who have household incomes that exceed $50,000 a year. And in fact, the fastest growing segment there have household incomes that exceed $75,000 a year. And they are what we call opting out. They have the means to purchase coverage, but they're choosing not to purchase coverage for a variety of reasons. A number of them are the young invincibles who don't think they're going to get sick, look at the value proposition offered by health insurance today and say, I'll take my chances. If I get sick, if I need care, it'll probably be an accident or something, and I'll go to the emergency room, and they can't turn me away, so I'll get treated anyways. So they're kind of rolling the dice, if you will. You know, we need a different kind of solution for those people. We need different products. We need different kinds of services. We need a move toward more catastrophic coverage, more high deductible kinds of coverages, so we can make healthcare more affordable, get those folks in the habit of purchasing health insurance in the private market, and then continue as their needs change. There's another large segment of the population of that 47 million, maybe as many as 13 million folks there, who are currently eligible for Medicaid and SCHIP, but are not enrolled. So we don't need a new program to get those folks covered. We need a concerted educational initiative to get those people enrolled in the Medicaid and the SCHIP programs.
And the people then who are commonly called, the working poor who can't afford insurance?
So now we have about, the 47 million is down to about 25 million. For those folks, we really strongly believe in a tax incentive kind of approach, tax credits, in which you might earmark some percentage of income that nobody should have to pay more than X percent of their income for health insurance premiums, and you index a tax credit based on household income to encourage those people to buy health insurance or to encourage employers to offer health insurance to their employees. A number of small businesses would offer it, but they're afraid that if we offered it, our people wouldn't be able to afford to buy it anyways. So we need to create those kinds of tax credits, if you will, for people, but we believe they should be indexed to income so that, you know, nobody has to pay a disproportionate share of their income for health insurance. So that's why I think the solution here is a public-private partnership to solve this problem. The government has to do certain things, get people enrolled in the programs we already have, create tax credits for people who are that working poor, as you described them, who are working hard. They work for small businesses and they just can't afford to buy coverage. And then we have to, as a private industry, create new products to attract those young invincibles to purchase coverage because they can afford it.
I have heard an array of opinion in doing these interviews about what are the prospects for changing the system we currently have to address the very issues you've been talking about. Some people are optimistic, some people are pessimistic. Where do you fall?
I'm optimistic that we have a convergence of events today. We have a motivated provider community who are looking for solutions, who believe that they have a lot to offer in the way of quality and value, and they've simply been the reimbursement system, the reimbursement mechanisms have inhibited their ability to really engage in that discussion. We have hospitals, physicians, payers, and government coordinating and collaborating in ways in which we never have before around establishing national quality measures. We have technology which exists today that can help us provide data and tracking and information that we didn't have in the past so that we can actually measure and monitor outcomes. So I'm very optimistic that we can modify the way in which we pay to incent the right behaviors. And I'm also very encouraged that the provider community will embrace that kind of a modification. So I think we're reaching a point, a tipping point, if you will, where we're all aligned to the same objective. I think the government, I think, will be the most difficult to bring along because, you know, because it's a political process and it always gets caught up in partisanship. But if we can get the focus in the private sector amongst the payers and the providers to move the needle forward, I think the government won't become a barrier. I think they will move along. But if we step back and look to the government to lead in those requirements in this area, I think it'll be problematic.
Even this year, next year, a new administration, whoever the president may be?
Well, I think there'll be a lot of rhetoric, but I still think I still worry about the partisanship.
Mm-hmm.
So I still think that it's up to us in the private sector, and certainly we believe it's up to us as a leader in the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association and our system of 39 plans and our 100 million subscribers. We feel like it's incumbent upon us to lead this initiative and to bring along with us the relationships that we've established over our 75 years of history, bringing that provider community along with us. And they are with us, and they are interested in making this move to create a direction which the country can move.
And one final question. I'm wondering, when you get to the table, talk about some of the changes, the ideas, the proposals, where is the line in the sand for you? What principles are ramrod, and where could you negotiate?
Well, I think for us, we'd like to build off of what works. And we believe the employer-based system works today. So we don't want to see that thrown out in the interest of just trying something new.
Or eroded.
And you know, there you can get data on both sides, but the data that we look at and we have been looking at indicates that employers are not looking to get out of this business. They are, in fact, they believe it's important. Important recruiting tools. It's important as far as being a thoughtful and responsible employer to provide these benefits. So we'd like to see that system supported and strengthened. So I think that is one place where we feel it's critical. I think the second piece is we feel like any discussion of extending coverage to more people has to be balanced with getting at the underlying costs of the system. We don't think that you can do one without the other. We have to do these things in tandem. And I think, are we willing to negotiate on any or all of it? Of course we are, because we want change. We want real positive change in a movement toward a value-based healthcare system. But I think that to simply do one without the other is tipping the pendulum in the wrong direction. We need to ensure that the movement is both to extend coverage and to encourage and promote value. We've got to do both, and we've got to do both fairly quickly.
Okay. Scott Sirota, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.